Welcome to Civilly Speaking with host Sean Harris. Each month, Civilly Speaking brings you interviews on practical and timely legal issues on the local and national level. We hope you enjoy today's show.
Hello, I'm your host, Sean Harris. This is episode 64 of Civilly Speaking, the podcast for members of the Ohio Association for Justice. I'm here with our guest today, Judge Jennifer Bruner from the 10th District Court of Appeals here in Franklin County. Judge Bruner is currently running for election to the Ohio Supreme Court. Judge Bruner, thanks very much for joining us here on Civilly Speaking.
Thank you, Sean. Glad to be with you.
Before we get started, I'd like to take a quick moment to thank our sponsor. Today's episode is brought to you by FindLaw. FindLaw wants to be a resource for all attorneys to improve their online presence and get hired by more clients. It's vital that attorneys understand the importance of their online brand matching their offline brand. In a post-pandemic setting, a firm's online presence will likely be their only presence. Potential clients should be able to find everything they need to know about you when they're searching for an online attorney. This includes a consistent logo and website, reviews, LinkedIn connections, videos, blogs, and other legal directories. As a diamond sponsor and friend of OAJ, FindLaw is here to help make sure you have everything you need to win online. Talk to your FindLaw rep for a free digital audit to make sure you're ready for business in 2021. FindLaw, the world's leading provider of online legal information for individuals and small businesses. Well, Judge Bruner, thank you again for joining us here today. And for those maybe around the state of Ohio who are not quite familiar, tell us a little bit about yourself and your family and how you came to be a Court of Appeals judge.
Oh, thank you, Sean. So I currently sit on the 10th District Court of Appeals in Franklin County. It's one of three districts that is wholly encompassed within one county. The others are in Cuyahoga County and Hamilton County. Those are the 8th and the 1st, and we're the 10th. The interesting thing about the 10th District Court of Appeals is state government being located in Franklin County causes us to hear different appeals than any other appellate district in the state. For instance, we deal with Board of Tax Appeals cases, Court of Claims. If someone sues the state of Ohio for injury, it goes through the Court of Claims. Sometimes Public Utilities Commission, quite a few administrative appeals that come first through the Franklin County Common Pleas Court. Now, the first time I was ever asked to run for judge was in 1992 by then Chairwoman Fran Ryan, and I decided not to do it, when I was thinking about it, I thought the court I'd really like to be on is the 10th District Court of Appeals. Well, the first court I was on was actually the Common Pleas Court in Franklin County, when 8 years later I decided to run against my friend John Bender, who had just been appointed by Governor Taft to replace Judge O'Grady. And we were friends, and we would actually sit together at the candidates' night, and it was a very close race. I won by 2 points. And was reelected in 2002, so we're talking 20 years ago, and then left the bench to run for Secretary of State in 06 and won that race by 15%, and then served an entire term, ran for the U.S. Senate in 2010, lost the primary, and then finished my term as Secretary of State, kind of closed all the books, handed everything all neat and tidy to John Husted when he became Secretary of State, and I went back to private practice. So 17 years of private practice, all told, started our practice in the corner of my bedroom when my kids were 7, 4, and 2. And I practiced election law, so that was before and after I left the Secretary of State's office. And then decided in 2013 to run for the Court of Appeals. So I've been on the 10th District Court of Appeals since November of 2014. We can get into the family issues later. I don't want to go on forever here.
Sure. Well, and you mentioned that you practiced, your area of practice was election law, or was election law. And then you served as Secretary of State. Imagine that, an election lawyer serving as Ohio's top election official.
I was perfectly positioned to do that. And, you know, there have only been 5 women elected to statewide executive office in their own right since Ohio became a state in 1803. So I was the first and unfortunately only woman elected Secretary of State. But it's a rough and tumble position. because the Secretary of State has the authority to issue directives that carry the force of law for boards of elections, and they're required by statute to follow those directives and those instructions, much different from a lot of other states around the country. And every board of elections has two Democrats, two Republicans, and usually the county chair of each party is on that board of elections. So things get to be a little bit dicey sometimes. I used to say as a trial judge that getting a bunch of judges together, especially trial judges who run their own courtrooms, was like herding cats. And then I used to say that managing all the members of boards of elections around the state was like keeping frogs in a wheelbarrow. So the election law part really helped me understand what the extent of my power was and what the limits of my power were. And I've watched secretaries of state since I was in office who have not been attorneys, and I've seen for them it's been a bit of a struggle in the beginning as their staff gets up to speed on election law. And in my office, I had worked actually as a legislative counsel when Sherrod Brown was Secretary of State. So even though a lot of information had been shredded when I took the office, I supplied the institutional memory that was missing when a lot of the documents and people who'd been there weren't there anymore. So it was helpful.
And during or as a result of your work as Secretary of State, you were awarded the John F. Kennedy Profile in Courage Award. What is that? And tell us about that.
That began in 1989, and the Kennedy family created this award to recognize elected public servants who undertook things that may not have been popular to the public, but were done in the best interests of good government and public service. And it is considered the most prestigious award for elected public servants. Other people who've been awarded, who've received that award, include President Obama, John Lewis, the first responders of 9/11, Kofi Annan, Jerry Ford, when he pardoned President Richard Nixon. So I was kind of shocked to get a call from Caroline Kennedy and ask me if I would be willing to accept the award. What do you say? Well, yes, that's great. And the funny thing about that award, and if you go to the Kennedy Library in Boston, you will see my name on the wall there. But the funny thing about that award was the weekend before I received the call from Caroline, my office was being attacked just brutally by partisan interests. It ended up in the 2008 election. I had death threats and had to be guarded by highway patrol, but that's beside the point. But I had looked for something to sort of bolster the morale of my staff. And I came across a book that had something that Jackie Kennedy wrote to Karen Blixen's trusted servant. Karen Blixen wrote the Out of Africa, and she wrote that essentially that courage in the civil rights movement at the time was more like the persistence that was needed and not necessarily something that happens quickly. And as Kumani was his name. And I sent that to my staff. And then of all things, when Caroline called me, I quoted to her mother's definition of courage when this was all about her father's profiles in courage. But it touched her, and we actually stayed in touch after that. And since she's gone to Japan and become the U.S. ambassador and come back, we don't really talk so much. But, I do get invited back for different things at the Kennedy Center. And the best thing about that award was that it was a shining star for Ohio, because we had been maligned for our election in 2004. And it meant that we were being recognized, even though it was coming to me. I felt that my staff and I and my state were being recognized for something good. And it was very, very heartening at the time.
And you shared with me briefly before we started the podcast today that during your campaign for Secretary of State, you had a distinguished gentleman from the state of Georgia that was helping you with that effort.
Yes, it was really something. John Lewis came to Ohio to help me campaign for Secretary of State. We held a very small, maybe 30, 40, 50 people, voting rights seminar. And two of my children were there, and they were just blown away when they heard his story. If you've ever heard him talk about preaching to the chickens when he was younger. He told us that story. He told us that before he crossed the Edmund Pettus Bridge, he knew he was going to get arrested. So in his backpack, and if you look, you can see he has a backpack with that light tan coat that he's wearing. He said he put a book, a toothbrush, an apple, and a change of clothes because he knew he was going to be going to jail. I don't think he knew he was going to get beaten that badly. But, and I believe that the book he had was Thomas Merton's Seven Story Mountain, which if you've ever read any of Merton, it's quite spiritually uplifting. And when you listen to what John Lewis said, you know, he really was a student of nonviolent action and of love and forgiveness, which I think allowed him to keep on going. He was amazing. And so what an honor to have him come to Ohio to help me win that election.
You also shared with me some amazing stories about your work overseas, teaching the rule of law abroad. Tell us about those experiences.
I was so fortunate, Sean, to be contacted at first to do work with the Republic of Serbia with their anti-corruption agency. Now, I mean, we would think to ourselves, anti-corruption agency? We don't have an agency like that in the U.S. But there, it's a completely different system. And so they were developing a new political finance, campaign finance monitoring system, very, very much unlike ours, where they were monitoring activity as opposed to specific financial transactions. So this was, again, in another language, but fortunately I'd had 1 year of Russian in high school in Columbus Public Schools of all places. And we worked through interpreters. And so I helped the anti-corruption agency solve problems, train people, present their new program to the media in various places in Serbia. And Serbia is about 8.5 million, whereas Ohio at the time was about 11.5 million. So what I had to say had some impact for them. I went back 3 different times, worked with misdemeanor judges to improve confidence in what they were doing when they were facing retention. My last time there was working with the Ministry of Justice under a new presidential administration on customer service and communication. So I was very blessed to actually kind of watch Serbia over that 2-year period go from a very sort of siloed country, but to be there when they were accepted as a candidate for accession to the EU, and also be there when negotiations started, which is still going on. Then I had the chance to observe 3 elections in Egypt, 2 in Cairo, 1 in Alexandria. And this was as Sisi was coming in. It was the new constitution, then the presidential with Sisi, and then the parliamentary one of the parliamentary elections. And just observing how a country like that struggles with democracy, struggles with Sharia law, struggles with the military presence, and you know, and then spending just time with the ordinary people there who could talk to me about what it was like to live there and their feelings about democracy and voting. I mean, when we were there, the president didn't feel that he was winning by enough of a majority, so he extended election day to a 3rd day. And as observers, our organization said, no, come back. We're not going to condone this. And then finally, I had a chance to teach in Sri Lanka at the Bar Association in Colombo. And the country had been through a civil war and still was fighting to recover. And, you know, the major piece that ran through everything in all 3 countries was corruption. And the corruption piece, the greater the corruption, the less the quality of life for the people. And I could see this firsthand. And it made me a better judge in understanding how if judges and other officials protect the rule of law, it leaves little room for corruption to worm its way in.
So maybe we do need an anti-corruption bureau.
Yeah, they used to ask me in Serbia, tell us about corruption in your state. And I remember at the time there had been a lot of prosecution in Cuyahoga County of public officials. So I told that to these were media people. I told them this, and they said, you're as bad as we are. I said, but we prosecute. And that's where you understand that a strong, well-organized, full of integrity judiciary makes all the difference.
Well, speaking of the judiciary, I would be remiss not to mention that, of course, we're in the midst of a campaign and you are running for the Supreme Court of Ohio. Talk to us about the campaign, especially in the era of a worldwide pandemic.
You know, I listen to science. So in March, when things shut down, I started looking ahead. I started listening to Dr. Fauci and others, and I said, I will be very surprised if we're back on the campaign trail before the end of the season. So having been through a statewide campaign where I had to completely change it from the traditional Washington, D.C. type to grassroots campaign where I bought a bus on eBay and we took it all over the state, that was my Senate race, I said to my campaign manager, all right, we need to turn this campaign completely digital. It'll take us 90 days to do this, so let's get started. And we did that. And interestingly, the polling that had been consistent with, I had a lead then, but it's cautiously because a lot of undecided, I more than doubled then. And so we did much of what you're doing here. We interviewed judicial candidates, but we did it on Zoom throughout the state. And we had a format for it. We had graphics for it. We had a theme. It was branded. We called it Achieving Justice. And we still have you can still find them out there on my social media. And I think we've got one or two more interviews to do before the election. But as we moved them through our media networks, they moved them through theirs. And it was very, very beneficial because it was doing what a judge should do, which is to help educate the public about the judiciary and work to improve the public confidence in what we do. Because, you know, the judiciary is a critical part of democracy. And like, it's interesting, you say elections and judicial are two great pillars of democracy, and they're really only as good as what people believe them to be. So that perception is as important as the work that's done. And so we kind of tackled two issues at once, doing the job as a good judge, but also trying to do a good job as a judicial candidate too.
Judge Bruner, I assume you're not doing this campaign on your own. You have a family that is standing behind you.
I have a very busy, growing family. And on my first campaign, the first statewide campaign for Secretary of State, my daughter was my finance director, and she was 25 years old. And in 6 months, she and I raised $1.5 million. She has since become a nonprofit fundraiser, and she's quite good at what she does. And my son was my driver, and now he is a very successful residential realtor in Columbus. My middle child is trained as a professional jazz vocalist. So she actually met her husband when she was singing in Bangkok, Thailand, and he's from Guinea, Africa. So they ended up getting married in Thailand and coming to the U.S. 4 years ago, and he's now a U.S. citizen, and he's so proud to be voting for me. All told, I have 5 grandchildren, and a 6th one is due next week. And my husband, Rick, and I have been married for 42 years. He's an attorney, and his last year in law school was my first year in law school. So our partnership is multifaceted. We can lock horns on legal issues and help each other out. But, you know, we've achieved a lot of satisfaction raising a family and having that many years together. My mom's still living in Columbus. And, you know, my husband and I have a farm in Columbiana County where he grew up, which is just south of Youngstown.
Well, Judge Bruner, thank you so much for joining us here on Civilly Speaking.
Well, thank you so much for having me, and thank you for all you do. I appreciate what attorneys do who represent clients who have been wronged by various people, things, systems, institutions. And, you know, when you sit down and you talk to attorneys who really, really are dedicated to their individual clients, it's humbling and it's moving, because our job as attorneys, and even judges start out as attorneys, is to help people, and no one can do what we do in a society, and you all need kudos for that, and thank you so much for having me today.
Well, thank you, and thanks to all our listeners out there. As an update, Civilly Speaking is now available for streaming on Spotify. If you like our show and want to learn more, check out civillyspeaking.com, and please leave us a review on iTunes, and we'll see you here on the next episode of Civilly Speaking.